Good afternoon, folks. Good afternoon. This is a special meeting of the Citizens Review Board today, September 2nd, 2011. This meeting was called to look into the board director's recommendation for the CRB to look into the interruptible cellular service in the bar system. I will call the meeting to order right now, about exactly 4:12. For quorum, if the members would say their name, please.
Ben Douglas, District 1.
Les Lynn Singer, District 6. William White, District 3.
Sharon Kia, District 2.
Peter Barnett, District 4.
George Bradley, District 9. Seeing that we have a quorum, the meeting are there any suggestions in the order of the agenda at this time?
Yes, there is. I would move to consider item 5 on the agenda.
Does anybody have an objection moving item 5 to number 4 before we discuss the discussion on the reschedule of next regular meeting on the Citizens Review Board?
No.
No one has any objections?
No.
So moved. Moving forward, is there any public comment on items 4 and 5? Yes, sir. Just step off to the microphone. If you could please tell us your name, sir.
Yes, my name is Edward Casbrook, and I work with the Identity Project, papersplease.org, on travel-related civil liberties and human rights issues. I suspect that much of your discussion may focus on policy going forward. I've seen just now Mr. Barnett's draft of a policy, which I think, unfortunately, should properly be rejected out of hand as entirely inconsistent with the authority of any bar body and entirely ignoring the conditions of the licenses, whether they are granted to BART or granted to telecommunications carriers, which simply do not give BART any authority whatsoever in determining whether to terminate licensed telecommunications services. Any policy that is considered or adopted by BART should and of necessity legally must be solely a policy defining the circumstances in which BART would ask the appropriate authorities, whether through a motion to a judge for an injunction or a restraining order, or through a petition to the FCC and or the California Public Utilities Commission for a suspension of licensed services. But BART's policy can be at most a policy for when you would ask the appropriate decision makers who are not in any circumstances within BART to make a decision which BART would be at most a third party petitioner and not the decision maker. But having spoken to the question of policy, I want to speak to what I think is more directly within the purview of this board as a BART Police Citizen Review Board, and that is the specific misconduct which was carried out by BART Police in suspending cell phone service. 47 U.S. Code Section 333 makes it a federal crime to willfully interfere with licensed telecommunications services. It is not an element of that crime that one have any knowledge that it is a crime, or whether or not one believes that one is engaging in that criminal conduct for the purpose of attempting to prevent some other future crime by some other person. That law has been used against environmental activists and anti-war activists who have damaged cell phone towers and other telecommunications facilities in the belief that that was necessary to prevent environmental crimes or crimes of war. And their arguments that they believed it to be necessary to prevent crimes have been deemed irrelevant and inadmissible in their criminal trials. The belief of some within BART that it may have been necessary to engage in criminal conduct in their minds is at most something that they might wish to present to a federal judge if they are convicted as an argument in mitigation of sentencing. And we're concerned that there's a common pattern here. The underlying problem arose not because of cell phones, but because there were protests. And there were protests because BART police were killing people on the platforms. There's a common pattern that the BART police are out of control. It's the same vigilante mentality that leads them, rather than arresting someone and taking them before a judge to carry out summary executions on the BART platforms, that same vigilante mentality that causes them, rather than going before a judge and asking for an injunction prohibiting a planned political demonstration, simply to set up barricades or close the stations when particular people whose looks they don't like approach the station. And the same vigilante mentality that causes them, rather than going to the FCC or the PUC or to a judge, simply to pull the plug on licensed telecommunications services, regardless of federal criminal law prohibiting that. I made this complaint, and I'm making it to you again, lest there be any ambiguity or doubt. I am here to complain to you that BART staff, including the BART police chief and BART's acting general manager, committed misconduct and may have committed violations of federal criminal law by interfering with licensed telecommunications services. I believe that the proper response to this complaint, which I made before the board and which has gone unanswered, and which I am now making to you, the proper response would be to report this possible criminal activity immediately to the FBI, to place the suspects, including the BART police chief, on administrative leave while the possible criminal charges are investigated, and unless and until the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of California decides that in the exercise of prosecutorial discretion, they are not going to proceed with criminal charges against them, and to ensure that evidence of these possible crimes is preserved, removed from the control of the suspects, and made available to the FBI. The question of preservation of evidence acquires particular significance because BART has yet to respond to a public records request for the records which would better clarify whether, in fact, criminal laws were violated. On August 12th, two computer security researchers, Christopher Segoyan from Indiana University and Jacob Applebaum from the University of Washington, made a formal public records request to BART for the contracts with the cell phone carriers, which would help clarify whether the equipment was licensed to BART or licensed to the carriers, as well as for the communications between BART, the cell phone carriers, and other law enforcement agencies. BART was required to respond within 10 days. More than twice that long has passed. No response has been forthcoming. It's difficult to avoid the implication that BART is illegally withholding information in order to cover up possible crimes by its own staff, including its police chief. And I believe that that's an appropriate matter on which this board can and should express itself. I realize that communication service may seem minor compared to transportation service, which may seem minor compared to the issues of life and limb, while their lives being menaced or defended by BART police that led to the creation of this board. But I think it's important both as a manifestation of the same mindset and the same out-of-control character of BART police who simply ignore the possibility that their authority might be limited or constrained by the law, and take for granted their ability to take matters into their own hands.
Mr. Hasbrook, you're a pastor for 3 minutes, but if any of the board members wish to continue to listen to the general week and some of the extremists.
Sure, and I have a couple of questions for him, too.
I'll stop. I'd be happy to take any questions. Okay.
Would you regard it to be a violation of the federal law that you cited if Bart were to suspend cell service because it believed there was a bomb somewhere that could be triggered by a cell signal?
Yes, there are provisions in federal telecommunications law for an emergency petition to the FCC for an emergency suspension of service.
Right. What would you regard a violation of the law if, without going through the process of making that emergency petition, they simply shut down the cell service because they had reason to believe there was a bomb in the station?
Yes. It would be possible for them to present a defense of necessity before a federal jury in defense against such criminal charges. Federal judges and the federal courts generally have frowned on such defenses of necessity, even in charges under this statute, but they could attempt to make that. But it does not, BART cannot absolve itself. Having violated federal criminal law, it's not for BART to absolve itself.
Sir, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Okay, on that, what if you didn't have, if it was a bomb that was a cell phone bomb? You don't have time to go to the courts. So what do you propose they do?
Again, whether there was or was not time in some other hypothetical circumstance, again, people often take actions and then have to defend themselves before a court when they've taken action in an emergency. In this case, clearly there was 24 to 48 hours notice, there was planning, there was ample time either to go to the FCC and or to go before a judge.
How long, I don't know, typically how long would it take to contact the appropriate body, FCC, present that petition, and then receive a decision back from them?
I'm not an expert in telecommunications law. I think that's something BART should be looking into. Unfortunately, this proposed policy, which presumes that BART would make the decision itself, doesn't seem to be directed toward exploring what the proper procedures are for that.
You said that they had one or two days to...
In this case, BART, at least as things have been described publicly by BART spokespeople and as they were described by the BART police chief and the acting general manager at the board meeting I attended last week, were that they had received information sometime in advance. Again, exactly how long in advance this was ordered, we don't know, because BART has failed to fulfill its legal obligation to release the records.
So let's explain that if, and I'm not asking you to agree with it, be something I'm not necessarily asserting it, but if the amount of time, the advance notice that BART had that cell phones are going to be used to organize disruptive activities inside the various platforms, if that time was less than the amount of time it would take to go through the process of drafting, finalizing, and then conveying to the FCC the appropriate petition, and then waiting for the FCC to make its decision and conveying that, if it was less than that, do you still believe that it was illegal, that they should have waited for the FCC to make a decision?
That wasn't the case. Now, if you believe that that is the case, then the proper thing for you to do is for BART to petition the FCC to change its rules to give you the authority you want, not simply to take that authority to yourselves. It's not your decision to make. It may be that it would be appropriate for BART to make that petition to the FCC to change its rules. But right now, that's not the way the rules are.
Mr. Osberg, I think the question that he's basing is not, I understand that you are actually, if I hear you correctly on the record, you're actually making a formal complaint for us.
I am.
Which will direct them to the independent auditor. But I mean, right now, we are not certainly in the stage of looking at whatever was wrong at that time. We are meeting here to look at the process of what can do in terms of recommending something in terms of policy. But I do have a question for you. Are you aware of any exceptions that might exist under the Patriot Act?
No, I am not aware of any. Again, I'm not. These are questions. It does not appear that BART has even begun to ask these questions. I mean, if you threaten to kill me, I can't just block off my street. Even if you just called me up and said you're coming to kill me, I can't just block off my street to stop you. I have to go to a judge. Hundreds of people do that every day in San Francisco and Oakland and other towns in the BART service area. In cases of imminent threat to life and limb, they go before a judge and they ask for a restraining order. There are neighborhoods in San Francisco and in Oakland. I live in one of them, where certain people are not allowed to walk down the street. But that's not because the police simply decided to do that. It's because the police went to judges. And in hotly contested adversary gang injunction proceedings, persuaded municipal judges to issue injunctions, barring specific people from doing specific things, as Bart could have done to prevent certain people from traveling on BART last Monday, rather than simply closing stations and summarily taking upon itself to execute what it thought the law should be.
Is it plausible to believe that in cases like this, we can always take a look at and think of it in some terms of somebody screaming in the middle of a theater, fire, 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 and the Supreme Court has held that that is a negligent act? Can we look at this and think that this is also a negligent act? If a cell phone could be used to disrupt things to the point that it caused harm to the regular consumer and to the people that are trying to go back and forth in BART. Is there a negligent intent in the use of cell phones that could be construed as big enough of a threat for disruption of the service?
Again, that might be an argument that were you to petition a court or petition the FCC for suspension of service would be considered by the court or by the FCC. That does not give BART any authority whatsoever to do this. This was entirely outside the law, to the degree that it violated federal criminal law. You don't have the power to do this. And it's important for this board, as the custodian of the idea, that BART and BART police in particular should be accountable to the law, to make clear that this kind of vigilante action is completely out of line.
Do you have your concerns in writing?
Yes, I've already emailed them to the board, and I'd be happy to send them to you also.
I think what we should do is turn this over to the independent auditor, and then he'll follow up with a report to us.
Since you already have made a complaint on the record and your intention to make a complaint, the procedure for us and the process now, we have been aware of the complaint. We can continue to talk about it. We are aware of your what your concerns are. I will direct you to the independent auditor, through the process with them. You can submit, if you could please, sir, the same paperwork you submitted to the regular board, to Mr. Mark Smith as well, so he can take it in terms of investigation. If I hear you correctly, your complaint is based in misconduct by the BART Police Department in violating license and communication 47 U.S. Code. But whatever it is, regardless of whether that is the end result of investigation, your complaint is based on misconduct by the police department when they disrupted the service of cell phones.
And I think it poses a policy issue, if I may say one other thing. It poses a policy issue for this board, and that ultimately this board or the independent auditor issues a report that goes to the chief of police. It's not yet clear what happens or what should happen where the person under suspicion of criminal activity in that misconduct is in fact the chief of police. Yet he came before the board last week and said, I take responsibility for this. But he has not yet taken responsibility, so far as I can tell, in going to the FBI and saying, I did something that I realized may have violated criminal law, and it's up to you to decide what to do with it.
Mr.
Hagenbrook, we're going on assumptions. We don't know what the chief of police has done. So I think what I'd like to see happen now is that we're here to give ideas to the executive body, our recommendations for the new policy. And I think we need to move forward on that, and that you submit your complaint to Mark Smith so that you can take a look at it and get back to the board. And hopefully that the information that you've sent to the board of directors, each of us can get a copy as well.
And Ms. Alvin, so that you understand, you know, the process that works here, the investigator will do his analysis of the situation of the complaint. It'll come to us for study and termination as well as the chief of police. If there's differences in terms of how we find or how we think the situation The end result might be that he goes to the general manager. There is a new general manager on board, I'm very aware, which was not part of this decision-making process when it did take place. So there's venues in which your concerns will be heard in a more specific manner. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public? Yes, sir, if you could just come to the podium and say your name, please.
My name is David. I report for eBay.org. First off, just about the proceeding itself, I just want to comment that I'm kind of disappointed that the representative who was appointed by the police wasn't here, because I wanted to ask him his thoughts on conflict of interest. I thought that was a really peculiar idea to have a member appointed by the police, with box guarding the hen house metaphor comes to mind. On the current matter, I think that that you really need to rely on the governing authorities. You know, it's the CPUC, it's the FCC, not this speculation that I hear, like, oh, what if somebody had a bomb? That's not even what Bart was looking at. I mean, worst case scenario, what's happened in protests so far is people have disrupted service. That's not a bomb. Dick Cheney, George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, all those guys tried to justify torture, which is completely illegal, waterboarding, based on, you know, what ifs, the ticking time bombs. So they just tortured people left and right in all these secret sites, and that's not a rationalization for illegal behavior. As the previous speaker said, if there happens to be that case, you know, take what actions you will, I suppose, but then you've got to face the courts and accountability. I just hope that you take this really seriously, because you've all just come on new. And this is a very important issue, and that you really inform yourselves as to what the actual laws are. Consult with lawyers, consult with experts like the previous speaker, and don't just what ifs. BART is not its own country. It has a lot of independent authority, but it cannot just make up its own laws, because it needs to be held accountable, and that's your job. If the public sees you guys not doing your job, not holding BART accountable, I understand that you don't actually have the authority to discipline anybody. But if you're not making firm recommendations, if you're not fully transparent so that we know who made what decisions, you're just going to be seen as just a whitewash board, and the community is going to be rightly upset about that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Is there any other public comment? Moving on to, thank you very much, both speakers, for your time and your energy. Moving to item number 4 on the agenda, rescheduling of the next regular meeting with Citizen Review Board for action. It is being rescheduled for the 19th of the month. Does any member have any questions about the change of that date? As a reason why we're changing the date from a previously scheduled time, it's due to the fact that the vice chair and the auditor will be at the NACOL conference, and we felt that if we extended the next meeting to the week after, we'll be able to put within our agenda a report of what the vice chair and the auditor on the status of that goal, and we also can get their input as we move forward with the bylaws as well.
The meeting
time will be the same, yes sir. 9 a.m. Does anybody have any comments, any problems with that date? There's an action item because we're changing. I would appreciate if I could hear a motion.
I move that next meeting to be scheduled.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone against? Any abstentions? So to move next meeting of the 19th at 9 o'clock in the morning. Okay, folks, and now we're for something with a little bit more meat on it. Item number 5 on the agenda, recommendation to BART Board of Directors regarding interruption of cell service in BART system. For action, we move to item 5. I actually took a little bit of sit back on this because I knew that every single one of the 11 members might have their opinion on how they wanted to move forward with this. if I can take a little bit of leeway on the chair and just give a little bit of a small speech here, I think that we have to really take into consideration here that we're asked to weigh in into the creation of a policy, necessarily to create a policy. I'm not sure whether 11 members of this board have the energy, the time, or even know-how legally, per se, to create a policy from wording 1 to wording Z. I think that we need to focus on what it is that we think should be part of the policy, what should not be part of the policy. Is there anything specific that we think that should be inclusive of that policy, and how that policy will affect everybody? And we can, I would think that it would be a best thing for the board to supply those bullet points to the full board for consideration as they generate the their own policy. But I have to caution that the creation of a policy that is going to pass legal muster, that it's going to be written in a manner that will be extremely specific as we move forward, and it will be approved by the full board of the elected board of the BARP. It's a big endeavor, more than we will have in a couple of hours today. Having said that, I would like to give the floor to the independent auditor, Mark Smith, so he can talk to us about the communiques that we'll receive with our packet today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I'm glad you mentioned what you did. I had some similar thoughts that I may just echo very briefly. What you have in the packets before you and are available to the public are comments from six members of this board put together. In order, there should be comments from Mr. Barnett, followed by comments from Mr. Hamilton, followed by those from Mr. Mensinger, Ms. Angeli, Mr. Douglas, and Mr. Jones. The last item that you have in your packet is something that came about just this past week after last week's Board of Directors meeting. It is a draft, it's a one-page draft cell phone interruption policy that came out of the BARP General Counsel's office. The creation of that was basically an attempt to align with what the Board of Directors had indicated they wanted last week. Again, as I mentioned, it is a draft, but this is sort of maybe the first attempt from the General Counsel's office at taking a stab at what a potential policy might be, what might be adopted by the Board of Directors.
Mark, question. So is that the one that has all caps draft for discussion purposes at the top, or is it the one that's the BARP cell phone interruption policy draft?
The first of those, so the one with all caps on the top. And I believe it should be, a one-page document on just one side. And so I welcome you. Obviously, I know you have not had a chance to read that yet, and it's relatively brief, but it may take a few moments, so if appropriate, you want to look through it or see what was done. On the other hand, I want to agree with something that the speaker before me said, and also I think I'll disagree with something as well. I agree with the seriousness of this issue, and I personally believe it's represented by the fact that you all came here on a holiday weekend on a volunteer basis, to sit here for a couple hours and talk about what you think you can give as input to the Board of Directors as they create their policy. To me, that's a sign that you are taking it seriously. I take it seriously as well, and I certainly appreciate that. The area where I think I disagree with them is what you should be focusing on today. Just as a reminder of how this was created, last week, the BARP Board of Directors had a special meeting where they discussed the need for a policy on cell phone interruption by BARP for any future incidents. In that meeting, they very specifically and directly, as many of you know, called upon the Citizen Review Board to give some input. In my mind, that means that they are looking to hear from you individually, as well as your representation of your constituency, what people would like to have in BARP's policy that will eventually be adopted. I encourage you to worry very little, if at all, at this moment about what laws might or might not be relevant. BARP has a general counsel and a legal department very capable of guiding them as they see fit on what things are or are not legal. I don't think it's something that, frankly, you need to be worried about right now. If you were to suggest something that were deemed inappropriate by BARP's general counsel, you would certainly say it. You're not making policy. You're providing input to the Board of Directors as they make policy. I think what they want to hear is what do the people of the Bay Area want as we set this policy that is clearly important to many. What factors are important? what factors does the Citizen Review Board think are important, what factors do their constituents think are important. And that's why I say I echo what the chairperson said. Something on the order of a list of important things to consider or conditions that you think ought to be included in a policy, such as, and you've seen this in some of the materials you have, such as a number of people must all agree before any interruption can take place. Things like that are ideas that I think will be helpful to the board of directors as they sit down to policy and vet it through their own legal process, whatever answer that legal process comes to. That's what I think your focus should be. And the goal, again, is to find a way during this meeting, it's not a long time to discuss a pretty complex issue in my mind, to let them know what you and your constituents feel is important as they set about creating policy. In my mind, there is a spectrum of viewpoints on the issue. This was, again, heard at the Board of Directors meeting last week. This is nothing new. In my mind, the spectrum ranges from, at one end, BART can shut down the cell phones anytime they like. It's their it's their property. It's their right. And no one can say it doesn't violate free speech, and there is no restriction. They can do it whenever they please. They can always shut down the trains whenever they please. That would be one end of the spectrum, in my mind. On the other end of the spectrum, and this is a view that has been expressed by one member of the Citizen Review Board, which is written in your packet, BART shall never shut down cell phone service. Now that it has been given, granted by BART, paid for by BART, now that it exists, it cannot be taken away, not for expediency, not for efficiency, not for safety, not for any reason. It's there. It cannot be shut off, ever. That, to me, are the two ends of the possible spectrum. You may fall on either side, and you may fall somewhere in between. If you fall somewhere in between, you may lean much more toward one side than the other. But again, the whole point, I think, of this meeting, and the whole goal that I believe you should hold for this meeting, is to just deliberate on what points you think are important for the BART board to consider, whether it be including imminent danger as a requirement, whether it be including the protection of a BART transport, in other words, avoiding the shutdown of stations, that be included, whether it be that neither of those be included, and lastly, again, whether it be that a number of decision makers must come together to make the decision, or whether you think just one person is the right person should be vested with that decision. Those are the types of things that I think would be useful to the board of directors if you were able to get a few of those down on paper to say, hey, we talked about it, we have heard from our constituents, we have discussed our own views, and we think that when you set a policy, you need to include these three things, or you need to explicitly exclude these two things, or you think we need to at least consider this. It's got to be grounded in safety, or it's got to be grounded in the ability to continue to transport people without interruption, or neither of those. That's what I think will be the real value here and the real value to the board of directors. As far as, again, the legal questions, they have a department that should vet those correctly or incorrectly. That's their job. The last thing I'll say is you have a number of tools in front of you, indications of what some members of the public feel, including the speakers that you just heard, including the letters from the ACLU that are also provided for you and also were discussed by the board of directors at great length. You do have the draft of the general counsel, what he thinks, you know, is potentially a first stab at a policy. But again, I don't think you should be handcuffed by that or guided by it. You just need to tell the board of directors, here's the things that we think are important, and then on behalf of our constituents, we think are important. Now, board of directors, go ahead and set a policy.
Thank you, Mark. So I'd like to start the discussion, and as we all probably have our own opinions, I'd like to start from left to right, give every single member the opportunity to express their concerns or their ideas, and then we move on that way to the next member, to the next member, to the next member. I'll go last, and when everybody has spoken, then we go back around. That way everybody has the opportunity to express their thoughts. Does that work with everybody?
Can I say something before we get started? Because I heard it mentioned twice today that we're here on a holiday weekend and you know, the convenience. When we signed up, we applied to be on this board. We were people should have been under the impression that you may be called upon at any time to address certain issues. So it shouldn't be an apology for it being inconvenienced, because we're here and they asked us to assist with this policy. So it should not be a hinder to anyone. And I just wanted that to set on record that we're here also to serve the public. Now, we may not agree on the same issues, but we all have to respect each other's decisions. Thank you.
Sir? Okay. Everyone, there is a, I have interested. Half a page worth of comments. It's on the flip side of Ken Jones' comments. You see Ken Jones put this over. You see Ben Douglas. So I'm not going to have to just read that again. I think they speak for themselves. I see we're trying to sort of tee up breakout issues. The first issue, really kind of skipping over what the standards are for suspension. There's the standards, and then there's the process for determining whether those standards have been met. And as to that process, I think it's important that you have multiple people involved. These are decisions that we make, sort of executive decisions, they're not decisions that can be made by the board of directors. I think we all agree, if there ever is going to be a suspension, if we do have a very active and mold over the course of days. But I wouldn't want to have a single person making that decision. And if you notice, the people I list there, only one of them is from the police department, the chief. I think there should be civilians involved in that discussion. And in fact, I think there should be just, you know, the chief of police or the acting chief. The chief is not available. And then several civilians. I'm not wedded to those specific people. I have the president of the board, the general manager, the general counsel. I think the general counsel is pretty important, given that there are all kinds of legal implications to this, which I can never pretend to fully understand. But the general counsel can sort of get a good hold of, you know, understanding of that, and then be able to apply it in an immediate circumstance. So that would be the general principle. There needs to be a group of people and a certain number. I propose 3 of the 4 people I listed. You know, I'm sure that could be tweaked a little bit. So that's my comment on the process. As to the substance, what the standard could be, I've laid it out here. I think there should be a simple principle. It has to be about physical danger, not just annoyance, not a message that the bar doesn't like, but activity. It has to be about activity. Not having people use their cell phones if they all, at the same time, like a flash mob, just chant something and say, you know, we hate bar police. That would not be justified. That may be embarrassing, maybe offensive, but it's not dangerous. But if they're doing it as I understand the case was, in this case, if they're using the cell phones to coordinate mobbing the trains, breaking windows, jumping on trains, etc., I certainly would see those facts as being threatening to life and limb, given what happens in those stations during rush hour. I would see that as being an appropriate circumstance. But, you know, we can speculate all kinds of hypotheticals. I think everyone here agrees that the cell phone triggered bomb clearly, you know, is justified. Well, maybe not Cam Jones, but I'm not sure if he really meant her. But I think I'm getting the sense that the majority of us would agree the cell phone bomb, clearly, that's an easy one. I think when you start to get to the more tricky situations, and I agree where the situation actually happened was not, you know, slam dunk. It took some thinking. But I certainly would come down, if I were analyzing that, say, that sounds right. As long as the facts were there, that there was activity that was going to be facilitated by cell phones that would have caused an actual danger, not just embarrassment or a message that Bart didn't like. So I would propose that be the standard. And that whenever there is a cell cutoff, that it has to be narrowly tailored. Can only be at the stations where there's credible evidence that there's that risk, and it can only be for as long as is necessary to address the physical risk, not anything that's going to be a message whose content part of our police is not left. With you.
So, well, this is one of the directors I caught it off time, and he was absolutely right, said this is two rights hitting each other's head. And it is. It's a right of the Constitution, and it's the right of being able to not have people destroy things. In my area in District 6, we had their opinion was that it was okay. They thought that, highly thought that it was okay to shut off cell phones if it was impeding on people's life. But they also thought the same thing was that we should have a check and balance system on this. And they thought that first of all, BART should have a sign. And it should, the signage should, BART reserves the right to have cell phone services shut down in case of emergency. That would sign on each one of the, would take care of that. And like you say, cell phone bombs. We're in a high-tech area nowadays. People have ways of doing all kinds of setting off bombs 10 miles away. So we have that to contend with, BART police do. Hostage communications and aggressors. There could be hostage communications in a BART training, and they're communicating. All of these are things that they should be shot off for. And I think life-threatening situations, including terrorism. Certainly you have a guy crawling up on a train, and you have people pushing each other back on an area where if you slip down, you could get highly voltage killed. That's not right. Although I do believe in free speech. Free speech is what got us in the United States. And I have, I believe fully in free speech. But when it becomes an area of time where you're infringing on other people's rights, when you're endangering lives, then it becomes another thing. It becomes a crime. It's not free speech anymore. I agree also that the chief of police should have another person to go with, whether it be a DA, whether it be a mayor or a council member, but there should be someone that they should be able to go with if it's an emergency. And as the gentleman said, if they wanted to apply to the FCC and 48 hours and could get it done, then I agree with that. The other thing that I think was the biggest problem that we had concerning this whole thing is we didn't really have any communications, a PR man. We didn't have a person that is a spokesman for the police department. We have people that are spokesmen for BART, but we don't have a police spokesman. If you see crimes in other cities, they will have a officer that they go to, a communications officer that is trained to deal with getting the information out to the public. We didn't have that, okay? The chief of police should not be doing this, in my opinion. He should have a communications officer. And I think this whole thing would have been, if people would have known, we shut off the cell phones because it was an endangerment of life. We had people crawling up on platforms, could get killed. Maybe we still would have had the flack as far as the Constitution. But it would be an understandable, we did this because. And that's what we've been lacking, and I think that's the big problem that we need to address too, is a PR man or an officer for communications. Mr. White?
Briefly, in my kind of unofficial survey of the public, there was quite a knee-jerk reaction in terms of not turning off the cell phones. So phone, turning off the cell phone, whichever. And most of the people I talked to had strong opinions about this ability to do so. I did come to the meeting on the 24th, and a question came to my mind, only because I did not have access to a document that actually stated the process used to make the decision to turn off the cell phone. I still would like to see that document, hopefully at some point will come forth so I can read it. The ACLU has made a strong argument citing different cases about freedom of speech, and certain members of this board have made opinions about safety concerns of the citizens of the Bay Area. I am still open, in my opinion, to come up with some sort of compromise or middle of the ground process that will help both sides, or accomplish both sides being satisfied. And with that said, I'd like to pass on to you.
Sure.
Thank you. I've looked through the comments that we've received from the various other board members, and I'm going to say I might, board member White, that I'd like to see what was generated in order to make the decision. However, I refer back to, you know, we've heard so many people talk about why they turn the cell phones off, and the discomfort to the people that complained about the cell phones being cut off. But we haven't heard, I haven't heard of people who, I've heard a few people who are in agreement of having the cell phones cut off, because of the dangerous situations that were occurring. This brings me back to 101 California Street incident, when the guy went up there and in the lawyer's office, and I was present there. I was an employee of Morgan Stanley. And they shut off the elevators and made us stay in the building until it was safe after SWAT team and everybody got up in there. Now, I look at that like, nobody questioned the building, 101 California Street, as to why they cut off the elevators and made people who worked there stay there, and actually the phone system was cut as far as within the building. But nobody complained about that, and here several people got killed. And I look at this situation where you have these people up on the BART train. And I rode BART for 24 years, and I experienced numerous times when we were held up because someone had attempted suicide on that very rail. But no questions ever came about that. What can we do to stop that? You know, so these are things that we need to look at. We place and blame at one individual or one entity. I admire Chief Rainey taking the responsibility of making that decision solely. But I have to think that he didn't act on it just by himself. He had support. And he was looking out also for the commuters during that time, because during that time of the evening, it's very congested in San Francisco. And we're looking at, you know, first it started out with the police officer shooting on the platform. Then they started protesting. Well, it's going to another stage now is the cell phones. So I'm thinking, well, what's going to be next? You know, so we have to take a look at all of this and try to come to a medium where it would be satisfactory to the community, to BART, and all the people that are involved. So everybody has an opinion, and everybody has a right to express their opinion. But listening, and I was at that meeting when the board asked that the citizen review board members chime in and give their input as to ideas for policy. And I was honored that they did that, being the vice chair, because this gives us an opportunity to also let the community know that we do exist and we're here to help the community as well as help BART be the best transportation system there is. So I'll pass it on to the chair, George.
Thank you. I think that everybody that's spoken so far is at least accepts the concept that there may be an occasion where suspension of service is warranted. And I agree with that. There may be such an occasion. Of course, the details of that occasion are difficult to predict. You can come up with some general guidelines and you've discussed those, and many of these draft policies have documented such situations in language that could be used or modified for a policy. I think the language in the document is a critical issue. And for example, there's been language in the board's draft where there's strong evidence. They use the language strong evidence of these things happening. I think somebody said reliable evidence, and somebody said, I think Mr. Douglas used another term, the modification of the evidence, of the nature of the evidence.
Credible
evidence, okay. I think that language is the critical, one of the critical elements. The language I proposed was credible and reliable. Those are two different things. Credible meaning that what threat that you hear is at least in principle doable, and reliable is that you have some reason to believe it's just not a random phone call you have. So that's what I the thing that I think is missing in the drafts that I've seen here are a review of the process should be part of the policy. And it's two parts of that review are important. One is a review of the process of making the decision. What was the intelligence of the decision? So that a judgment can be made whether it fits the requirements of the policy, if it's reliable and credible, or if it's reasonable, or whatever. That determination is based on what the actual intelligence information was. And then the second part of it is, was the decision effective? Is there some way of determining that whatever the decision was resulted in reduced or no activity that was anticipated, so that we can understand whether this is a reasonable thing or not? Mr. Hamilton, in his document, proposed that information be obtained before any decision is made, whether or not there's any evidence that such suspensions have been utilized in the past, and whether or not they've been effective, and I think that is an excellent idea. But I've anticipated that there's not a great deal of information in that regard. I mean, wrong, but if this policy is adopted, it might be good to gather that information and the whole part of the result. I also agree with Mr. Hamilton that we're not in a position, we don't have the necessary information to decide what the law is in this regard. Whether it's law, whether it's regulation, whether it's licensing, whatever the controlling documents are, will be something that the general counsel will, you know, have to decide, and ultimately they may decide to control the law. But I don't think we should, I don't think it's our role to consider what the law is. We're not lawyers. Obviously, the board cannot adopt a policy that's in violation of the law. Whether or not we can recommend the policy, I think we can recommend the policy being ignorant of the law, because we all are in this area ignorant of the law. I'm not going to accept one piece of advice on what is and what is not. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
Chairman, just wanted to echo something. I very much agree with what Mr. Barnett said, that I think we need to, and I'm more generally, maybe this is already happening, the general counsel's office needs to put together, either internally or commission an outside law firm, to put together a very serious memorandum that weighs this, especially looks at, I mean, you know, this can't be the first time this issue or something pretty close to it has, well, maybe I could be wrong, but I'm guessing something along these lines has happened, you know, sometime in the last, 10 to 15 in the cell phone era, and whatever has happened in courts have gone up. And I think, we can talk about sort of general principles and philosophy and cell phone bombs and people jumping on tracks and all that, but obviously underlying it all is the law. And as Mr. Barnett said, none of us are specialists in this. And I'm a lawyer, but I'm not going to profess any real expertise other than what I vaguely remember from law school on this. I mean, this is a very specialized area of the law, and I think we need to get very specialized advice. So if that's happening through the Bar General Counsel, I think we should just let Bar know. We also do want to see that too, and that's going to have a huge effect. I think whatever we do convey to the Bar Board of Directors, I think we can still maybe put something together, but the first thing is whatever we say is subject to the conclusions of the General Counsel's office as to what is the book permissible.
Okay, thank you. We'll go back to you as we go around.
Okay.
So as I heard everybody, I pretty much a couple of things came to my mind, and I actually was able to make a list of 12 items that we actually have talked about in terms of the bullet points that we need to generate. You know, it comes to my mind is, what is in the best interest? What is in the best interest of the park and the public that it serves, and obviously the community that it serves? I like the idea of a communications officer. I think that channeling all the communication through the park spokesman sometimes might not be the right thing to do, specifically if that person could be trained to also be a communications officer and might be a little more aware of what safety issues might arise that might not necessarily be Mr. Johnson. I like your recommendation of having a vetting process. And I said to Mark Smith, I was thinking, that it needs to be a political, it needs to be operational, it needs to be a safety process. And we have a political branch. We have the elected members of the board. The president of the board should have that should be the political responsibility to make that decision with the chief of police, which is a safety aspect of it. And we're talking about the general manager was the operations aspect. I think those three folks have to get together and agree that it is something that has to be done. If they're willing to take the political, the operational, and the safety concerns and make that decision and live by that decision and embrace it and defend it, I think it's a policy we can talk about. I think the problem here, as I talked to a lot of people on the mission and people that I represent, was in at the gym, which is the conversation of it all. It's where was the communication? Where was the communication after it happened? Where was the openness of the process? And I think that no one has any problems with
having actions as long as there's reasoning behind it and there's full disclosure. And I think the concerns continue to be that there is not full disclosure from BARC on a regular basis. And they feel that they're not getting it. And a public just gets on the BARC, goes back and forth. They see this as a distraction. They see this as a problem for them. But they, when they have the time to think about it, they think, you know, I know that I have to have a little more communication in order for things to work in the real world. I have a little bit of, you know, I'm an exemplary guy, so somebody says credible threat, I think actionable intelligence. So what's actionable intelligence? What's a credible threat? You know, and I like the fact that it can just be an anonymous. Absolutely. There are solutions to this. Don't offer the service. If you don't offer the service in BART, then you don't have to have problems whether you disconnect the servers or not. That's a very simple solution. If the service doesn't exist, then no one can use it. But I understand they can BART, and my partner taking BART, that we can work while we're on BART. And before there was cell communication with BART, it was a zero land as we came under the bridge. I'm not sure that a disclaimer sign could bypass the law. You know, we reserve the right to serve somebody. No shoes, no service, no shirt. I'm not sure whether that could work, but it could help in terms of the policy implementation. Somebody knows that it could happen. I mean, are we talking about a municipal code? Are we talking about bylaws of BART that have to be explicitly represented under that caption to make sure people know what to refer in terms of the policy? You know, it's one of the things. So I'm one of the kind of persons who, you know, I believe in civil rights, I believe in expression for everybody, but I also believe in my safety. I believe that you have the right to sit across from me and yell at the top of your lungs everything that I hate. And I have to be able to do the same across from you. But the moment that you go from the expression of your ideals to something that becomes more of a threat of me as a person, whether it's the public at large, we have to have a different conversation. Let me reiterate the bullet points that I have so far. There should be a peer officer that from the police department that speaks to the community directly. There should be a check valve in the decision-making process, whether the chief, the GM, or the chief, the president of the board. Only when safety to the public comes from a credible threat, whether it is to the system, to the public, or to the equipment. A sign as a disclaimer to passengers. Report back on reasons for disruption to the CRB and to the elected board on the cost, the efficacy of the action, and the end results, to include a report on whatever the credible threat was, and the rest, and the duration of the disruption of the service, as well that when possible, if prior notice given, like this was in Facebook, because I got a hit on Facebook 2-3 days before it happened, whether it is feasible for them to go to the FCC and to a judge and say, we might have to have disruption of the service due in the fact that we think there's a credible safety to our system, to our consumers, and to our service. I think those are the points that we have talked about so far. Those are the bullet points that I have. I think the other one, the last one was that there should be an outcome council that should be consulted by BART in terms to balance out, because everybody knows if you get two lawyers, they give you two different opinions. So maybe an outside council can go out and say, this is what we're thinking in terms of our policy. Why don't you vet it out in terms of an independent lawyer? I know that engineering firms do it all the time. And let's see what the responses are. I think those are bullet points so far that we have. Everybody agrees?
Sure. Good. I think we're
good. I'm the same way, but I can't think of anything else.
Mr. Wynn?
Well, the only thing I think is left at this point, where it's clear to me that we're not going to really come up with a recommendation or without further input from other sources other than what we have here from professional services, such as had enough from outside council or the BART council to bring it forward. a study and wording that
can do is maybe go through the draft and make our comments on about this draft. But other than that, I have to see where we go from here.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. White, but what I'm seeing here is we had a discussion by six members right now.
Yeah.
And six members have expressed all the things here that we're talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
I think that we cannot get into a process in which we try to write policy. Undoubtedly, we are not the elected members of the BART board. We are a community appointed that represents the community. We talk with the community. We definitely have our independent ideas as well. And I think that they're not asking us to write policy, but to weigh in into the policy-making process. So if we can supply them, if we can have a conversation in the next 45 minutes that we have about these bullet points that we have, we can come to an agreement in some of these bullet points that we can represent to the board of directors. I think we will go a long way in fulfilling being part of the discussion and adding to the mix. And specifically expressing to them, and I can tell you that I probably feel that a lot of the members of the board probably would agree with a lot of things here. I actually think I looked at the, you can stream the meeting, and I actually, there's two or three points here that were actually not discussed at that meeting that are particularly regenerated here. And I think that if we focus our energies in constructive discussion of these bullet points, or maybe more that we can come up with, and present those forward, I think it will go a long way to helping them make policy that is more tangible. And if they decide to go the way they want to go and not follow any of this, hey, you know, the moment they implement a policy that is not viable or acceptable by law, they don't have to defend it. But I think that what we have to focus here is to give them something that they can look at and say, that's a great idea, we thought about that, that can be implemented. Well, we don't think about that. But for us to think that we can write policy for them,
no.
I think we'll be great on any scope that I will let
them try. Just giving them an idea.
Mark.
Yes, sir.
Just a suggestion in case it's helpful, so along the lines of what you were just saying, Mr. Chairperson, is that I think there are, in my mind, two possible things that you can do. Again, that's a suggestion only. One is to debate those bullet points you listed off, and I was trying to make a similar list as you were. I think you covered all the ones that I had on my list as well of things that were discussed. And you may want to have a debate of whether you all have to agree on the entire list or most of it or none of it or whatever. That's one thing that I think is would be of value, and you can then bring that list to the board of directors saying, hey, these are 12 points or 11 points or 9 points, whatever it is. The second thing that I think may be of great value is if you have the time and desire to look at the draft policy from the General Counsel and see. I have a feeling, I read it once but not in the last couple minutes, I don't remember everything. I have a feeling there will be a large amount of overlap with the bullet points that you've discussed so far, but maybe not 100% overlap. And maybe you can look at that policy and say, hey, overall we feel good about this, but we would request to change this one thing or take out this one thing and add in this other thing. If that's, again, something that you want to go through in your discussion, that might be helpful for them as well as they're going to be looking and have maybe already looked at the General Counsel's draft to say, hey, we also think this is pretty good, but we would add these three things, we would take away these two things, whatever it may be. Those are two paths that I think each would be really effective and sort of beneficial for your recommendation to the board of directors.
And we can even ask as one of the bullet points that we ask that we can weigh in again on the final policy. We can even ask that to a bullet point as well, because I'm sure there's at one time or the other going to be a subcommittee formed by them to discuss this. So I think we can say, you know, if it's possible for us as one of the bullet points recommendations. That
did you want to go over the bullet points one by one?
I'll go again once everybody finishes talking to me. I'll go again. Yes, sir. Chair.
I'm in agreement with you.
Sir.
I think it would be useful and possible to
Thank you.
I think it would be helpful to the board exercise of our responsibility, if possible, to come up with 12 bullet points or 11 to 15. And I only would have a comment on, at this point, on one of those which has come up, and that is the process for authorizing the decision to be made. I think this kind of a decision is one that's basically a tactical decision that's made under exigent circumstances. And if you're going to require a second to that decision that's made by the authorized police person, that means somebody's going to have to be available immediately to do that all the time. And who's that person going to be? If you want to say you can go to a court to get a restraining order, you know that all the courts work somewhat differently in that regard. It'd be a logistics nightmare. And if you have time to get that restraining order, you can do it. But if it's a situation where you learn something in the last 4 hours that you need to act on, in the last 8 hours, or you learn it at 3 o'clock in the morning and something's planned for 4 o'clock the next afternoon, maybe that time isn't available. And I think that in that case, the only people you can count on are the people that work, the offices that are staffed 24 hours a day, and you have to give that authority to the police department. I just don't think there's anybody else who can be relied on to be available all the time. So I would just recommend that that's the way that that point should be made.
I just have a follow-up on that. I think I mentioned this before, I think it's important that there be some discussion or some approval is outside the police department. And I hear your point, you don't want to be in a situation where we're casting around what we, the police board casting around trying to find someone else we need to talk to. That's why I laid out a list of a bunch of people, and it may not be the exact right number. And I assume that those people are all available pretty much 24/7, or even the general manager. I'm assuming that when you're the general manager of BART, they got your cell phone and home number, and if they need to call you 3 a.m. at your house, they'll call you. And I'm assuming that's true for the chief. I'm assuming it's true for the general counsel, and the chairman of the board of directors. But regardless of, I mean, whatever list of people we think should be part of that, the requirement should not be a unanimous opinion for two reasons. One, sometimes someone might be hiking off in the mountains out of cell range. Secondly, sometimes that one person may disagree, and it shouldn't require something unanimous. It should be more than a majority each. So whether it's we have a list of 4, we need 3, or a list of 5 and we need 4, or 5 and we need 3, I don't know what the exact right numbers, those numbers are, and I don't know the exact right identity of those individuals. But maybe we know that all of the individuals on that list should be people who are generally expected as part of their job to be available 24/7 in emergency situations. Because obviously we shouldn't have someone on there who's a 9-to-5er, because you know, people come up outside of office hours.
When the chief is not available, there's always a VCO.
Right.
So I think that we need to focus in saying that there has to be a balance and a vetting process. And we can mention maybe 2 or 3, 3 out of 4. I mean, I know that at 2:46, when I get text by one of my general managers, I become text because I have to be responsible and answerable to them and make decisions at that time. And that's how it works. I mean, if you're general manager of BART, you are available 24/7. I mean, that's of course part of the course. But we can say 2 out of 3 if we want to, or 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5. But if we focus that the bullet point is that it has to be a vetted point, then it has to be a civilian involvement. Maybe there has to be an elected official involved, and maybe it has to be a police officer involved. We take out of the equation the fact that it is just a tactical decision, or it is just a political decision, or it is just an operational decision. Because it requires that there is a conversation about the possibility of doing something that can cause harm, and literally, or have some legal implications, or a myriad of other implications. So I think that as a bullet point recommendation, I think they'll get the point. They'll get the point that we're trying to say, you need to create a balance in which how you make this decision process, and you should don't be reacting to just one person, because one person will make a decision, and that's not it. And to specific is that the chief of police is not in charge of bar. That's how it works. So it's, that's my input. But let me reiterate the points that we said, because Les wanted to hear them again. The introduction of a public relations officer directly from the police department to speak to the community directly. A check back on the official-making process, whether it's two or three other people, whether it's the chief, the GM, the president of the board, or a fourth person, to vet the process so it's not only a tactical decision, but it's more of a discussion. Only where safety to public comes from a credible intelligence or a credible threat, whether it's to the threat comes to the system, to the public, or to the equipment. Whether the implementation or the usage of the sign as a disclaimer to passengers is appropriate, and report back on reasons for disruption to the CRB and to the elected board, to include in a report on the, what was the credible threat, what was the cost, what was the end result, what was the efficacy of the action, the arrests, and the duration, the arrest if any, and the duration of the disruption. When possible, if prior notice is given, like in the past incident, that the FTC and the judge be made a petition in order for them to follow the law, that an outside counsel be used to vet on the possible policy to see if there are any legal ramifications not fully vetted by in-house legal counsel, and that the CRB board, as much as possible, have an opportunity to weigh in again once the final policy has been generated. And the possibility for the CRB, if possible, because you cannot make an elected official appointed you do anything, if possible, give it the opportunity for the CRB to weigh in again once the final policy has been implemented or the final policy has been drafted.
I move that we accept those bullet points as stated, and then vote to go ahead and send those to the board.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It has been motion has been made and seconded. We can open it for discussion, or we can go straight to a vote. Discussion.
All of these bullet points that have been given us. Again, and I don't need to have it repeated before I vote, but it suddenly occurred to me, it seems that we are in agreement, there's some sort of agreement that BART should have some mechanism to shut down the cell phone system, rather than BART should never shut down the cell phone system. So I really, again, I haven't come down on the side of either, but it seems there's a lacking of thought on the other side, and BART not creating bullet points for that not happening.
First to what Mr. White said, I don't know what bullet point you have under the topic of not shutting down, except not shutting it down. I think the debate we're having, and from what one of the members wrote, he would apparently not ever favor shutting it down, and I appreciate that, but I don't think the majority feels that way. And so I think having the bullet points on the parameters of taking that step are something that we should do and do it today so that we have opportunity to have input to the decision. But I had one specific question, and maybe if you're going to use the bullet points again,
we'll take it from the amendment at that time as well if we have to.
Yes, sir, it's away.
Oh, again, the bullet points of not shutting down or not having control of shutting down, I would, you know, weigh in with the opinion of the ACLU in terms of First Amendment rights, and then the FCC or the ownership of the airways in terms of maintaining that they would not be destructive. Again, I'm just throwing this out as a devil's advocate. I think we're just ignoring one side of it. And I'd like to hear some debate on it.
And I, Mr. White, I agree with you. I think if we look at it in terms of this perspective, there's two things that can be said. We can say that I agree with Mr. Barnett is not shut down the service, don't shut down the service ever, ever, ever. That's one side of the coin. Because then there will be no possible explanation, no reason whatsoever, or any justification whatsoever for the service to be shut down. That's one side of the equation. There's no if and between, there's no gray here. But we have created a great bullet point and great situation here because we're saying to them, as much as possible, we will not. We can say and add as a bullet point that we don't think that disruption of the cell service is something that should be done, unless, and that's what we're doing here. We're saying, oh, there is a policy. We would like to weigh into this policy, and we are actually making it quite restrictive. We're asking them to have three people make a decision in whether to shut down the service. We're asking them to have a credible, reliable threat. We're asking them, once that is done, that it has to be based on the three reasons. There's a credible threat to the safety of the public at large. It's a credible threat to the system itself. And there is a credible threat to the operations. Those are the parameters in which you have to bring to us. Not only do you three of you have to make that decision, live by that decision, but then we are demanding and we're asking that you have a report based on that credible threat. What was the end result? What was the credible threat? Was it efficient? Was it, did it serve a purpose? Were there any arrests? And what was the credible threat? What was the credible threat? And only under those circumstances, and when avoidable, and when you have prior notice, that you do this as well. We are putting so many steps for them to have any action on this policy that we're saying to them, and I think that most of them believe that at one time or the other, there might be a situation in which we might think that it's a thing to do for the safety of the public at large. But this is what we need to see. These are the conditions in which we think you should do it. And if you have to do it, and you give these conditions, that the report has to be extremely thorough of why you make that decision and what conditions you met, this part of the list, in order for you to implement this policy. So it's either a no, or it's either we say yes, but under these conditions. And I think what the bullet points are doing are expressing that. But that's my take, sir.
Based on that, I think we skipped a step. I don't think we hold this committee, this is a new board, as to what they want to approve. Do they want to approve large control over cell phone? Yes, no. If yes, then we can move on to bullet point.
No. Mr. White, I think we're not going to never shut down the cell system. What we're voting for is making it harder for them to do it, to which point it would be, I don't think I'm going to do this because I got to go through all these hoops to do it. It's the same that idea of that cowboy sitting over there going, shut everything down. It's to save him from doing that because he isn't going to be that guy because he's got to go through these procedures to do it. And that's what the bullet points are. You've got to go through these procedures, and if you don't, then you got to, or if you do,
If you do, then you got to meet us for judgment, because you got to tell why you did it, when you did it, how you did it, and if you did it wrong and it didn't do any good and it didn't do this, then we have them on recommend filings or anything else on this. But it's actually not shutting it down. It's making them harder to shut it down.
Any other discussion, please? Yes, ma'am.
I don't think we are trying to make it harder for them to shut it down. They ask for our assistance and giving them suggestions on how to shut it down more appropriately so they won't be so criticized. I don't think we're voting on to make it harder for them. I think they ask for our assistance, which they are looking for a diplomatic way in order to have this the cell phone, if necessary, shut down where the public will understand. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Again, I'm perplexed here, because I'm hearing two sides of the argument. I'm hearing when I went out and did my survey, people said BART should be able to do anything they want with their system. Then on the other hand, I read and then I hear scholars saying, well, BART doesn't control everything in the system, such as the First Amendment. They're obligated to ensure and uphold the First Amendment right for everyone. And to shut down ways of communication is a violation of that right. I came to the meeting and on the 24th, and basically at that meeting there was a lot of pros and cons for and against, like my survey about what BART can do and what BART can't do. Now, what we've done so far, we've come up with a list of items or bullet points that says, if you do shut down if you want to shut down the system, you have to use it. You should look at this. This is our recommendation for our policy. But again, I don't see on the opposite side a policy saying, well, you know, we're in a different era of mass communication, and we should look at constitutional rights to guarantee this new era, which is cell phone dependence, cell phone communication, and protects that to a full extent. So, with that said, I still would like to hear, and I still would like to hear bullet points supporting the other side of this, of protecting the First Amendment to do the extreme of use by saying under no circumstances will cell phone use be disrupted. And I'm not hearing that. I'm hearing that this board has already said that, okay, we're going to allow you guys to disrupt the service, but we would like to see this in the policy for you to disrupt the service.
I think I understand your point. We are making the recommendation or recommendation about what to put in the policy that authorizes BART, or that BART will authorize itself to shut down the cell phone service under some certain conditions. That we are doing that. If we wanted to make a policy recommendation that they not do that, well, we could do that. But right now, the motion is to make a policy recommendation to do that. And I think if a member would like to propose a policy recommendation that we not do that, that we make a recommendation that they not shut down cell phones for this, then we could have that debate too. But I think right now that's not what the motion is before us, and I think we should get that done, and then if we want, we can go to the other side of the point.
With the motion that's currently on the floor, are we in agreement that this board is going to authorize some sort of mechanism, some sort of process for BART to have full control of cellular use within its system?
Mr. White, what we're doing is giving recommendations. We're not authorizing BART to do anything. They ask for recommendations. So they take our recommendations and apply it to their draft, which we ask for it to come back for us to critique it again and send back any other changes that we see fit. So we're not authorizing. We're just sending in recommendations. When you send in recommendations, you're not authorized.
But the recommendations is to have some sort of mechanism to shift that bar.
No.
Let me pull everybody real quick and a side note here real quick. And we can just nod our heads and say yes or no. Are we in agreement that we think that shutting down of the cell service in BART should be an extreme measure? Are we in agreement with that before somewhere here? We think that should be an extreme measure. I think we agree that it's an extreme measure.
Right.
I mean, so, and having said that, we all agree that it should be only an extreme measure. We are trying to put forth points that will make a check system on that extreme measure. Now, I think, Mr. White, I think that a way for you to us that we can assuage your concerns is that you might be able to put forth a friendly amendment of the first bullet point that might say something like, we believe that any implementation or any cessation of cell service on BART board should be only under the extreme or most, the word I'm looking for is right over here.
Extreme
measure. But if the cell service has to be, and I like the word that you used, wasn't suspended, not terminated. But if the cell service has to be suspended, we agree that this should be some parameters in which, or some bullet points in which such suspension of service might take place.
Some standards.
So if you would think, Mr. White, that by putting that extra bullet point there, it sends a message that we think that we might not be in full agreement of this, but that we think that there are some circumstances under which it might be necessary. But we think that the standards that we're putting on the bullet point for your consideration are some that should be taken into account when implementing such policy. Maybe that would be the compromise for us.
So are you asking for an amendment?
I'm asking if he has, because we're going to put this to a vote, and as it looks right now, it might be a 5-1 vote, which means that the motion will pass. But as a chair, and knowing that we are 6 members here, and that this is an important issue for us, and that you're expressing your concerns in more than one time in terms of the microphone, what I'm giving you, Mr. White, is the possibility and the ability to do some kind of friendly amendment that will create a balance and assuage some of your concerns. Edward Hasbro.
Before I say any more, I just would like the first speaker, Mr. Hasberg, to come up and...
Do the other members agree to call Mr. Hasberg again? Because
sure.
We're past the public comment stage. Okay.
I just want to hear the other side of this, because as you heard, we're leaning towards a recommendation, or bullet point sort of recommendation. So I just want to hear your side one more time before I will agree with them.
I don't want to, but thank you. I appreciate you wanting a clarification. I'm not sure what I can say without repeating myself. I think if you believe that there are circumstances in which BART would want to shut off cell service, which others have been licensed following proceedings for the FCC and contracts with BART to offer. If BART wants to do that, then the factors you talked about might be factors that the decision maker might consider, whether that's a judge or whether that's the FCC. Now, I've heard some of you say that in circumstances, although those were not the situation last week, that was not the situation last month, it's not ever been the situation so far as we know on BART, it's not clear that it's ever been the situation on any transit agency in the U.S. But some of you apparently believe, as do apparently some others, that there might be some as yet unrealized circumstances in which BART might want an authority it does not now have to become the decision maker in an emergency. And if that's what you think, go to Congress. Talk to your representatives. Ask them to propose legislation to give you that authority. Propose to the FCC that it amend its regulations and the terms of its licenses to give the landlords of a licensed operator authority in certain circumstances to do that. That is the appropriate process. You're still talking about vigilante action that grossly exceeds any legal authority of BART at present. And so what factors might bear on and what might be legitimately considered by the decision maker, the judge considering a motion for an injunction, the FCC considering a petition for an emergency suspension of the license, are simply irrelevant to the question of whether BART has the authority to do it on its own. And if BART doesn't have the authority now to do that, it makes no sense to be talking about or for this board to be acquiescing in a policy by which BART will further demonstrate to the public that it is out of control and refuses to recognize that it is subservient to lawful authorities, that BART is not judge, BART is not jury, BART should not be executioner. And that's why this board exists, to rein in tendencies in BART to falsely assume that BART is judge, jury, and executioner, as we all know. So I think it is highly appropriate for this board to rein in BART's management and the BART Board of Directors and remind them of the limitations on their power and urge them, if for some reason, which I'm not persuaded of, and I'm not sure how many others are persuaded of, BART wants to seek more authority, it should seek that authority through proper channels from those who now hold it, through federal legislation or changes in federal regulations.
Thank you.
you, sir.
Thank you.
Let me just say something really quickly here. I mean, because I would say this on the record. I consider myself to be a liberal Democrat, and I've been a liberal Democrat for a long time on the left, to the left, to the left. But I can have an argument of Brown versus Board of Education, the same thing. Well, you don't have the ability to integrate schools. You don't have the right to protect people with HIV/AIDS because there's no ADA designation on the Supreme Court to protect people with HIV/AIDS. You do not have that. You don't have that right. You have to follow the rules and go to the judge. In the 1900s in Puerto Rico, that has an AR regulation. You couldn't have two people to get together and congregate in one place and talk about something because it wasn't under the scope of their law. Law changes. Laws get challenged. Situations get challenged. We're not asking here to have, and I think what we're obfuscating here with the speaker is we're gearing the conversation of the possibility of having something to say on a policy based on a passion of killer cops. And I think we can confuse this here. We can confuse having a policy recommendation, the bullet point recommendations of a possible implementation of a policy with something that happened. We are trying to weigh in of a possible situation and how to make a situation be more palatable for the public and be more controlled, and that the end result be that it affects everybody less than what it did last time, in a responsible, efficient, and focused manner. So I would add, as a friendly amendment, if it's taken, that under the bullet point number 6, to include the report of credible threat, also to be added, and that such report be made part of a public record. Would the maker of the motion and the second of the motion accept that?
I accept that. Yes, sir.
So, Mr. White, a friendly amendment has been accepted to make it part of the public record, which at the same time will assuage some of the fears of the speaker himself, the Freedom of Information Act, that he's been having some problems 20 days to get some information from them. As I said, we're not implementing policy. Are making recommendations that the policy is implemented, that these are things that we would like to see under that policy. No discussion?
I would like to have the motion, points in the motion restated just for clarification.
Number one. The creation of a public relations officer from within the police department to speak directly to the community. Number two, the creation of a check valve system in the decision-making process in which two or three or four individuals that are not only of the police department, whether it's the chief of police, the general manager of the BART agency, the chair, or the president of the BART elected by board, make a decision on the majority to implement the suspension of service. Only when it is only used when safety to the public comes from a credible threat, whether the threat is to the system, to the public, or to equipment. The implementation of the sign as a disclaimer to passengers of possible disruption and the right of BAR to have the possible disruption at any time. Then a report back be generated on the reasons for disruption of the service to the CRB and the full elected board, and in such report it is included the reason of the credible threat, the cost, the end result, and the efficacy of the action. Also, what number of arrests, if any, the duration of the interruption, and that such report be part of the public record. Then when possible, a prior notice is received to a demonstration of a threat, like in the past incident, that an FCC or the judge be petitioned for disruption of the service. That when possible, if prior notice is given to an incident or a protest, like in the past incident, that an FCC judge be petitioned for disruption of the service, and an outside counsel be vetted on the policy not to include the in-house counsel of BART, and that the CIB board be allowed to weigh in again once the final policy has been drafted.
Those are the 9 bullet points, I believe.
Not necessarily in that order.
Not necessarily in that order. But they're in some kind of order.
The second to last one, I think should be the first one. Because what I was going to recommend is
But we can say that these bullet points are not submitted on any particular order.
No.
They're not. You go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in order to do 3 and then 4.
It's not prioritized.
We're not prioritizing bullet points as much as saying these are things that we think that should be part of your policy.
So, I don't know if that one bullet point would include this. Which is Bart seeks clarification of its authority to do such.
Legal clarification.
Yeah, and that's what the answer can be better on the possible implementation of the policy comes in.
Okay.
Does that
help? There you go. See that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, folks, we're about 5 minutes away from 6 o'clock in the afternoon. We have been discussing this now for 35 minutes. There's a motion on the floor. There's a motion that's being made and seconded. I cannot call the question, but if there's no other discussion on this bullet points, I would like to call for a vote. If there's no more discussion. If you can say your last name and I or name on the microphone, we can just vote by affirmation. What vote you both like to do?
Douglas, aye.
Westminster, aye.
White, aye.
Sharon Kidd, aye.
Barnett, aye.
Perez-Velez, aye. The ayes have it. The bullet points have been approved for submission to the full board of our board. Seeing at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd like to hear a motion to adjourn.
Before we adjourn, I believe Mark Smith, the independent auditor, had docked up previously. Do you have something to add to this?
No, thank you for mentioning that. I was just hoping to help out in moving you towards a vote, which you obviously just did.
I'd like to hear a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion is adjourned. 6 o'clock.